home. We are WNST. AM 1570 Taos in Baltimore. On my crowded set, we are at Costas in Timonium, the way the coach would say. Oh, we had Michael Buchdahl on this week talking Phillies, Orioles. He roomed with Charlie Ekman for years with the Blast. So some great Ekman stories. We're at the OTB and at the Timonium Spa, as Dick Girardi once called it. We're at Costas. We're having crab cakes here. I already had a fried crab cake and a salad because my Planet Fitness physique is getting me back. Our GBMC sponsorship. Don't tell anybody my crab cake was fried. I'll lie and say it was broiled. It was not. It's all brought to you by friends at the Maryland Lottery. We have the new Raven scratch-offs. I love the Kiss Bird face. That's my favorite Kiss Bird face for the Ravens. We've had a couple of winners out here today as well. I got two guys here ineligible. Although Allen's eligible. Not really an employee to have one. Luke, you can't have one, but you can hold one up. Luke Jones is here. Alan McCallum here. You guys been in the same room more than three times in your lives together? Or do I, other than
five or six, at least.
Yeah. We've known each other a long time. I've worked at WNST for a long time now, and Alan predates me there, so... So, yeah, we know each other. I mean, we don't see each other
But you don't do, like, doing radio together, we've done this, like, three times maybe ever.
No, we're on five or six seasons.
Did. So, last year, we did, right around this time last year, it was All-Star break, trade deadline, somewhere in July, because it was before training camp.
We did Readers in Reisterstown together, didn't we, the three of us?
That sounds right.
Yeah. We did Costas and Dundalk together
last
one
fall, we did right around, was it right during the World Series or right after it?
Coco's? Where'd you go?
We were in Catonsville. Right after.
Catonsville. State Fair?
We're at State Fair.
They're all running together from there.
Yeah. They do run together, but yeah.
Well, it's like the years with Allen. You know, like Jeffrey Mayer. How many years ago was that? Quick.
30.
96.
Right. 30. Right. Right.
Wild.
Right? I started with you in 95. So, essentially, my entire adult life has been full of Nestor.
Well, and I was there to say goodbye to her mother last week. Paul Evans walked in, who's a legend in the stat world and a legend at your mom's high school and a teacher. And I could not believe that he didn't know you and you didn't know him. But he knew me, and he looked at me. He's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, because he knew I didn't go to his high school or be taught by your mother. And I'm like, Alan's my dude. He's like, Mrs. McCallum and I talked 22 years ago. And I'm like, you don't know Alan. And then your sister was there, and she's giving me Orioles trivia. It was a beautiful thing for your mom, and to see how much love was given your mom. I just want to start that. Don't make me cry. My mother's birthday was last Sunday. We were Costas and Dundalk. My mother who birthed me's birthday is Monday, which is our 28th anniversary. I'm taking the day off to go with Kenny Lee. I know it's been tough for you. You've been watching the birds providing any mystery sal for you?
Have they provided a salve for me? No. If I've been watching the Orioles, I'll tell you what, Nestor. For the first time in the last couple weeks, there have been moments when they were stinking enough, and I turned them off because, like, I've got enough right now. I don't need this.
14-0 game.
I think I turned them off at 8-0. And
I proudly did not watch.
Neither of us watched that game.
Neither of us watched the game. That's what happened. You better tell them.
Yeah.
I was running around yesterday, so I heard. I knew what was going on. I wasn't right in front of the TV, but I saw the comeback. So that was exciting. Look, if there's any more frustrating team to root for than the Baltimore Orioles in the last 3 years at least, I can't think of which team it would be. But they won a game yesterday. It's good.
I'm making Luke Jones the executive producer of all things this segment at this point.
Ooh.
You know, we can date this and talk about they need a center fielder. They need a right-handed bat in the outfield. They already have one.
They got two?
They got two, and they both are lousy. They need more bullpen help in Helsley and Rico Garcia. They don't have a catcher, and they have two catchers, but they don't have one right now. They don't have a third baseman, but they have four of them, and they have the Encarnacion CES, as they're called.
CES.
Well, he's been here a week and a half. He's going to the Hall of Jim Travers. He's going to the Hall of Fame.
It's probably a good comp.
Yeah, well, there you go. I'm working on it. I want a Mike Paliarulo or a, you know.
You don't want a Mike Paliarulo.
Who was the guy we got in Scott Zelli? 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 Zelli?
Scott
Zeal.
Todd Zeal.
Todd Zeal. Oh.
Todd Zeal.
I was actually.
Dude, I just mentioned Jeffrey Mayer. He was on the field when that was next year.
Todd Zeal and Pete Incaviglia.
Inky Dinky Doo.
That was August 31st deadline. Right?
Bigger than Lonnie Smith. Not as good as Bob Horner.
Yeah.
Not as good as Keith Moreland.
could bring in a late stage Jim Tomey or Vladimir Guerrero.
How about a Kevin Bass? You want to go with one of them?
King Griffey Jr.
Doug Drabeck.
King Griffey Jr. would have preferred that we had never traded for
Kevin
Bass.
Well, this is why I don't want to sit here seriously in the middle of all this delicious food and all of this sport at the OTB Emporium. I don't want to play the game where I mention every really, really lousy trade deadline acquisition going back to the beginning of time, because, like, literally since this has been a thing, and I've been on the air 35 years, pretty much when it started to be a thing was in the 90s.
Keith Moreland.
I gave you Keith Moreland already. I already gave you.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that.
I gave you Drabeck. I gave you Bass. I was in the locker room when Lonnie Smith walked in that day, and we're like, there's the savior. The hero of the 1980 World Series. It's 1994. But literally.
That's funny. That's funny.
Well, I got a lot of funny baseball in me. But I'm going to let you executive produce this week.
Aaron Hicks. Aaron Hicks did a good job for them.
Okay.
Did a good job. And
better than Jack Flaherty was at
that point. Some of the names we just mentioned weren't trade deadline acquisitions, though. Like, even Aaron Hicks, that was in season. But that was
July.
That was like late May. Yeah, Mullins got hurt. Memorial Day.
Okay.
I remember that. And then Hicks had just been let go. The Yankees had DFA'd him, I believe. And he was out there, and then they signed him. But yeah, trade deadline. I'll give you one that he did everything you could have possibly asked him to do, but it just hurt trading away the guy that they got, that they gave up for him. Andrew Miller.
Bobby Bonilla.
Oh, yeah. Bobby Bonilla. I mean, Bobby Bonilla was good for the Orioles.
I can't believe I called him Scott Zeely. Todd Zeal and Scott Rowland.
You're thinking about...
That's 30 years of...
What's the ESPN guy, Zeli? Wasn't there a Zeli on ESPN?
I don't know. No.
But yeah, Scott...
I just remember Todd Zeal pump faking and throwing the ball right into the air. I mean, as a 13-year-old Orioles fan, and that was the first time I was ever watching them, having any consciousness watching them in the playoffs... That, obviously the mayor thing had happened at the beginning of the series, but Todd Zeal, I hear that name and I just think of him spiking the ball.
Right, if we're going to do shitty Oriole memories, I'm going to give you one and then we're going to move on to whatever the
executive. There are a lot of them, by the way.
I got two words for you. You ready?
Yeah.
Jack.
Cost.
Well,
at least that was funny, though.
He was a good guy, too.
I'll still pull that up on YouTube and have a chuckle.
Hall of Fame spring training.
See, your era laughs at that. My era laughs at early. When I need.
Pretty much.
Big picture on all of this. Let's pretend somebody's listening on Tuesday and they've dealt a bag of beans for a bag of bones, or they've dealt Adley Rutschman for a pitcher. I'm making this up. I don't even know what could be attractive. Last time I had Zach Dermer on from Farnham Dermer, and I'm making up trades like, well, if they dealt, let's say they wanted to deal Rodgers and throw Rutschman in, could they get two real players to replace them that may have next year? Because to me, that's going to be the play. And since you got my head working on it, Luke, the Elias part of this was, what can we get that would help me next year? I haven't met a baseball person this week. I've had Buster Olney on. He says hello. I've had Tim Kirkchin on. I've had Janet Marie. I had Evan Drellick on. I've done a lot of baseball this week. There's no one that believes anyone should be thinking next year's a thing.
Yeah.
Like a season. Like, wow. Literally, we're not going to have a spring training. It's going to be screwed up. If it happens at all, it'll happen in May. There's going to be a war. So prepare and manage your roster for the war. But don't throw the towel in, because for the Tigers, they can get whatever they want for Scooble, but there might not be a next year. And if you work there, sell tickets there, whatever you do there, have a baseball job there, you want to be in the baseball business, that baseball's got 10 weeks left, and let's go get them and play like there is no tomorrow. And so I'm hearing that, want to factor that in, because I do want to talk about the future of the team no matter what they do this week, as looking to the future, because none of us believe in the present, right? There's nobody here that believes in what this is right now, right?
We were just talking about this. Look, if you tell me there's a scenario where the Orioles can get into the wild card, I can accept that.
It could be 82 or 83 wins. Like, that might be a very low bar.
But if you're asking me, are they going to do anything once they get into the playoffs? No, I do not believe that. So, is it good enough for the fans of Baltimore just to get in?
Good enough for David Rubenstein and Eric Getty, and they're the only guys that matter. Every time you guys start talking baseball and this and that and minutia, I go back to the two guys that run the team who clearly have made a bobblehead of themselves and wrote a book. There's one guy. The other guy's up on Cal Ripken and best bunkies with Cal Ripken because he's trying to, like, work his way in, and nobody in the city's met the guy yet.
The reality,
and he's going to be the guy who really owns the team.
The reality of this team is that they're only in contention because the rest of the American League is so mediocre to horrible. That's the reality. And if that's what you want to base your success on, your bar is very low. This team was
sold to us. But that's the only thing
that
is this year. That's all that we have, right?
Literally. I understand that. So if your belief is there will be no season next year, we might as well take a shot at it now, fine. But I still don't think that, as it is currently constructed, just adding is the way to make that happen. So what do I mean? I'm talking about you have to make some decisions about who do you let go to make room for somebody else. And those are the pieces that you're going to have to work with. So, yeah, a combination of selling and buying, I think, is what the Orioles have to do, even for this year, to get to a point where they can even make a little bit of noise in the postseason.
Well, Luke, I mean, I bring it up with you. And again, if somebody's listening on Tuesday and they make a trade or don't or whatever, but to me, I'm not shocked if Rodgers or Rutschman or one of those guys are gone in regard to we're going to get somebody else's player that we're going to have control of that's a third baseman next year or an outfielder next or a piece for us. Now, I don't know how they're pulling that off, but I don't think this is about giving up double-A pitching to get a relief pitcher. I don't think that that's what's going to – I don't think they'll win those battles. I think other teams will offer more and are in a better position both at the farm level and in a better position to win to overbid for the four or five arms that you would want that are bullpen arms or for Scooble or for a special player. I see no scenario where they should be standing pat right now or saying, we love all of our major league players. We can't win without Jackson Holliday. I'm not dealing Holliday for Scooble, but it did occur to me on Wednesday, had they made that deal 2 years ago, they would have had the ace that they sort of wanted, needed, but it takes sacrifice and it takes belief in your guys. No one would have traded Gunnar Henderson for anything a couple of years ago. Now no one would want to sign him for $400 million, right? So somewhere in between there, they're not all going to smell good on Monday at 6:01 when you and I get together, Luke, after Geddy Lee, of course. But I don't feel like anything's untouchable or that if they take a piece off the current boat that's a major league player, Rodgers, Rutschman, Ward, go down the list of any of the candidates.
Taylor Ward is infinitely tradable and they could still get somewhere into the wild.
And who are you giving the at-bats to? O'Neill? I'm just saying. How are you really trying to make the playoffs if you're getting rid of Taylor Ward for a bag of donuts unless you're getting a relief pitcher
that's now? That's a fair question. I think Dylan Beavers would factor into that, where I would think he becomes an everyday player then.
Right.
And who knows? Maybe there's another deal you acquire, another outfielder that doesn't have the same profile but might have another year or two of club control. And I hear your point about the lockout, but the worst thing they could do is start trading for a bunch of rentals. I'd rather them stand pat than do that, quite frankly.
I've said to you all season when we've spoken that the frustration with the Orioles is that we're 8 years into this rebuild, and we still don't know who so many of Elias' players are. And
we do. They've had at-bats. They've had plenty of at-bats.
But in terms of if they're building anything remotely special, and that's where I think
who's
going to
hit it?
Well, you know what he tells the old man? Injuries. Clearly, the old man said injuries in front of you from 5 feet away on Friday.
Okay,
so
he can say that. I'm not going to say that.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's what...
If Heston Kerstad, if Jordan Westbrook, Rutschman...
Heston Kerstad's been healthy and playing at Triple-A two months. They haven't brought him up, even... I mean, they could have gotten him on the roster if they wanted
to. Well, Henderson looks eminently healthy, right? We're not speculating.
Healthy, yeah.
I believe... They talk about players having slow heartbeats. The guys that you want in the clutch in the moment, whether it's in the field or at the plate. Gunnar Henderson plays like his gear is stuck in high at every moment. He's always in fast forward when he's trying to make a play in the field, when he's on the bases and he gets picked off because he's gone too quickly. When he's at the plate in a big moment, he always looks like he's ahead of what's happening, and you need the guys with the quote-unquote slow heartbeat in those moments.
Well, it was Ripken, right? Ripken was just, you know...
Eddie Murray,
big
absolutely. Time. Might be my favorite example of that. But you've heard me say this... Alan and I were talking a little bit before the segment, which I know you
Here's
hate.
The part where we crush Gunnar Henderson, right?
No.
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 I just in general about this team, I don't know if they're built, like, what is this? And part of what you know, but no, I that sounds kind of silly, and it sounds like I'm being a little disingenuous.
Well, they can't play defense. Let's start with that.
But I go back to something that you just said, and you know, having baseball reporters who are much better at their craft than what I am, you know, covering the team locally. But is this team getting in at 83-79? And okay, maybe they managed to win one game and they lose 2 out of 3 in the wild card round. Are they selling any tickets based off of that at this point in time, 8 years into the
league? What if they deal for Skubal on Monday and they could put that at the front end of the rotation?
Not.
Okay.
But the pitching isn't the problem at this point. I mean, starting pitching.
They would have a chance to win an October game if they had Skubal. That's where I am.
But are they selling any more tickets if they win one October game? Like, 4 years ago, yes.
Yes.
Now? And that's where I look at this thing, even looking through the lens of, and I agree with.
I think something that looked like a playoff run on September 13th when the Ravens begin, even if it looks like, this doesn't feel like a playoff run right now, but it is. 2 games off the wild card, it is.
Right. All the things that Mike Lass gets raked over the coals about, and for years people have talked about the pitching, you look at the starting pitching right now, they have one of the best rotations in the game right now. Is
over the last 2 months.
So
it's been there. Yeah.
And you look at their future. I think Bradish is a top of the rotation guy. I think Shane Boz has top of the rotation stuff, and we're waiting for him to mature into it. I think Trevor Rogers, I completely agree that they should not have signed him at the beginning of the season because we needed to see who he was. And by the end of May, you're going, ugh. But you know what? He's rebounded and looked a heck of a lot more like the guy from 25.
That's great, but what's he worth?
So
what are you going to pay him?
Well, my point is that he's put this together in a situation where no one would have expected it, and you give him credit for that. So I
think he's going to hit the market and get a lot of money. Somebody's going to give a left hand. You're going to obviously make a mistake on him, but somebody's going to pay him more than any of us would be willing to pay.
Whoever's the runner-up for Skubal could do a lot worse than Trevor Rogers, who's going to be a fraction of the cost, but could still be a guy that I think profiles.
My point would be, if you deal him this week, and again, if you're listening on Tuesday and they don't, but the philosophy would be, you're going to get something that's going to help you this year and next year.
But if you're worried about this year, you don't trade Trevor Rogers because you're not going to get him.
Can't
win without him. So, I mean, it's a contradiction in terms.
It's such an awkward space.
But they have to go for it.
I guess.
For me, I hear what you're saying about next year.
I hear everything you're saying. Like,
I think you make every move at the deadline with, I need players that are going to help me beyond the 26th
season. Well,
this
is where you get into Taylor Ward and into, like, if you start dealing Rodgers and Ward, you're not trying. Unless you're replacing it with real big league talent that would be controllable in the next year. Right?
That's fair. Rodgers,
and they're
going to
get calls
so
on both
Ward.
Of those guys, right?
Yeah. I mean, what's funny about this, and you make a valid point. Look, are they a worse team without Taylor Ward? Yeah, they are in the immediate, you know, the now. But at the same time,
but if he's your cleanup hitter,
right?
Does it matter?
He's not hitting for any power. He's a below-average defensive outfielder, and he's going to hit free agency in 2 months. And he's not at an age where you're interested in extending
him. And what are you
him.
Getting for him? A Double-A pitcher.
Well, but there are teams out there looking for right-handed hitters right now, and he fits that bill anyway.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, Tyler O'Neill, who's been awful through much of his Oriole tenure, is at the exact moment where you might be able to move him, maybe not for a ton, but, I mean, getting that contract off the books for next year.
Nobody's taking that money.
You're going to pay a big portion of that.
I think if you kick in some money for teams that are desperate, for a guy who's hot right now and playing his best baseball in 2 seasons. If you kick in some money, I think you can get some.
Oh, well, I mean, now you're talking about opportunism. Alan McCallum is here. Luke Jones is here. Baseball. On the bigger picture of what they are, let's talk about philosophically. And let's start with the defense. I mean, I've harped on this. Alan, you've harped more even than Luke and I have. Because Luke beat up the batting last year. I beat up the pitching in the offseason. You both have done that. You have been adamant about the defense more vociferously, and I don't have you on as often as Luke, but you were talking about it before it became a pandemic, quite frankly. Like, you were talking about it was still in Wuhan, and now it's nightly and it's chronic, And it's freaking embarrassing. Embarrassing outfit from that standpoint. And the fact that they can be a wild card is even crazy.
Dillon Beavers and Taylor Ward, and before a month ago, Tyler O'Neill, I would tell you, were retrievers. I mean, they just sort of go after the ball. Does Dillon Beavers have a chance to improve? Yeah, but his instincts off the ball off the bat are not great, and it costs him a lot, particularly in left field and Camden Yards. Gunnar Henderson, through the second half of 25, I thought, wow, I'm finally seeing him become a shortstop. I see this happening. And all of that progress feels like it's regressed in 26. He needs to be at third base. If he can't play third base, I don't know. But at shortstop, he always looks like he's behind the play or moving too quickly. He never feels like he's in the right spot.
He doesn't set his feet when he throws.
And he's on so many routine plays, he looks like he's doing this nasty thing and it messes up. I've seen Cal Ripken. I've seen Mark Belanger. Heck, Miguel Tejada was a pretty – he wasn't spectacular, but he was a solid shortstop.
Bordick was excellent. J.J. Hart was excellent.
I've seen too many average-looking players play great shortstop in Baltimore to look at Gunnar Henderson and say anything, but that guy needs to be a third baseman. It's too soon for Jackson Holliday. I think that on all levels of his game to declare what he's going to be.
Well, they might think he's a shortstop now all of a sudden.
I don't think he's a shortstop. I want to see him be a decent second baseman.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
At times, in the same way, Gunnar has stretches where he plays good defense, but it's just so up and down. And
you can't be a stretch guy at shortstop.
He's a streaky fielder, which you don't say that about many defensive players.
It's Steve Sachs.
Defense is supposed to be what shows up every day. I mean, it's what kept Cal Ripken justifying him being in the lineup, even the times where he wasn't hitting, right? Throughout the streak. But
it's embarrassing to watch these guys play.
Embarrassing. That's
it's
the
embarrassing.
Word I mean.
And
the people in charge of it should be embarrassed.
I certainly indicted Hyde about it, but Albernaz is here, and it's the same situation. They look unready to play at the major league level defensively. They look fundamentally unsound. And that you certainly have to indict Mike Elias and their institutional belief in defense when assessing that. And if these guys can't improve at this point, and I think Jackson Holliday is too young. Even Coby Mayo, I mean, it's weird. Coby Mayo's problem isn't his glove; it's the throws more often than not, and I think that can be improved. So I'm not even.
Melvin Mora became a much better defensive player at the big league level.
Leo Gomez, I keep bringing up Leo Gomez was a butcher when he came up, and they hit that guy 1,000 balls every day.
Brooks
every
would even
day.
Work with him because Brooks was on the broadcast team.
And Gomez was never going to win a Gold Glove, but he became a major league decent third baseman for the Baltimore Orioles.
Because they loved his bat.
Yeah. His bat was serviceable
they
for a time.
They thought that's why he was a third baseman, though, at that time.
So, I mean, I'm not even prepared to completely throw Coby Mayo out the window, but, I mean, I've seen enough of Gunnar at short.
I've seen enough of most of this.
I think
literally, I mean, Luke and I getting together every day, and, you know, your tragedy and your family, like, on a daily basis. I mean, Luke, you said this the other day. This is the most unlikable Oriole team in a long time in a lot of ways.
Just in how they play. I mean, I think the entertainment quotient of a baseball team, boy, I can remember over much of my lifetime, the Orioles having some teams that were not very good, but they were still solid defensively.
Yeah.
Right? And they would have players that you'd say, that's a good defensive player. I mean,
I like watching that guy play.
Yeah. Yeah, and they just—they are unwatchable in that way. In the sense that, I said this to you after the comeback on Wednesday, where I was just listening to the fourth, fifth, and sixth inning on my way home from the Ravens, and I was angry, getting frustrated, just listening to it. I mean, it was just listening to the defense, let alone watching it.
Even Blaze Alexander, who has been a much better player.
Solid, yeah.
But he was touted as a Gold Glove defensive player at all these positions. I've seen him play center field. I wasn't impressed. He looked better at the corners. And even at third base, where he's certainly more serviceable than Kobe Mayo right now. I've seen him make a lot of wayward errors.
I used a Stratomatic. Are you a 1, a 2, or 3, or 4? You know, Robbie Alomar is a 1. You know, Sherman Abando was a 5, but sure. There was no 5. They don't have any 1s. Like, you can make a case for Rutschman.
Pete Alonso's played like a 1 this year.
You can make a case for Alonso or Rutschman or Kowser to be plus defensive players. They're not stalwarts. They're 2s. They're not 1. Like, yeah. This franchise is fielded 5 to 7 ones lots and lots and lots of years, in the years when they've stunk.
Tim Kirchin's doing a podcast right now where they're going through various things. I think it's with The Sun. And I've seen some of the clips. And he's talked about Belanger and Robinson. And after that, Cal Ripken. And how many great left sides in the infield the Orioles have put up that, you know, they've had arguably 3 or 4 of the greatest left side players in the history of the sport. Look, Kowser. I think I told you. I mean, Mark Messina and I had a conversation a couple of months ago before he got hot about how he shouldn't be a major leaguer. And I told him the only reason he's in the major leagues is because he's their best defensive outfielder. He's a gold glove caliber corner outfielder, and he's proven to be a
solid center
fielder.
Really solid.
But I will say again, if you can sell him as a center fielder who has unlocked potential, I'd trade him tomorrow for anything to open that space up. And yes, that would ask the question who's going to play center field for the Orioles in 26. But
Cedric Mullins.
But if you can get something for Kowser, I'd do it. But ultimately, they need to go back to the drawing board about how they bring up their defensive players. And, I mean, I don't know how that happens at this point, but I think it starts with making the decision that Gunnar Henderson is a third baseman.
I don't want to be flippant, and Luke and I go at this for hours at a time. I'll leave it for both of you. Who on this team have you not given up on in your own mind or lowered your bar on? I've already lowered my bar on what Holiday can be, better or worse. Henderson? I don't, you know, that, and Rutschman, both of them have been so, in the history of the team, so wildly, I'm going to the Hall of Fame or I'm Chris Davis on his worst day.
Sure.
Like, literally, and I'm uncomfortable with that as a modern baseball fan, that's just a thing that happens to players, because I don't believe that's the case at all. But when I look at every one of these players, they are a diminished version of what I believe their potential could be, and therefore I have a diminished expectation of them. Other than maybe Brandon Young, I'll throw him in, or Rico Garcia.
He wasn't even expected to
be anything. Nunez, or some.
I haven't
been. Or a Blaze. It's guys that don't matter. Jeremiah Jackson.
You're
Sam Basayo.
You're talking about the core guys. Basayo is the one for me.
Sam Basayo.
And the bat has unreal upside, in my opinion. I have questions about, is he going to continue to catch? How much will he continue to catch? Mm-hmm. And how that looks. And that's fine. I mean,
where
he's
his best value for the team is now they pay for
him. I don't think it's necessarily for him to abandon catching it entirely, but I don't see him as a guy, one, that you would want him to, or that he necessarily would be capable to the level of a contending club of being a guy that's going to catch 130 times a year.
And how that will affect his offense, too.
But I think in the way that this, kind of how it works right now, he can be the 1A to a 1.
Yes.
And then he's DHs every other day. Spells Pete Alonso at first base 10 times a year, whatever. I mean, Pete's going to be getting older. I don't know exactly how that looks, but I love the bat. And he's 21. And now, same thing could have been said about Gunnar Henderson at that age.
Sure.
We see how that's played out. So you never know. Development is not always a perfect line.
You hope that's the case with Holiday.
But,
because see the potential for him.
And I would also say with Holiday, and look, you know, I've been pretty hard.
I called him a little leaguer 2 weeks ago when he's hitting 190.
I'm not ready to say that there isn't another level for him. That said, I'm not seeing the 1-1 upside.
You don't think he's Robin Yao?
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know if he's going to be a guy that's going to be a multi-time All-Star.
He's really
22.
Young.
Like, he'll be 23 in December.
Look, I have heard national professional after national professional baseball evaluators say the same thing about so many of these guys, whether it's Kowser or Mayo or Holiday, that there's too much talent that he drafted the right guys and there's too much talent in there for it to be this bad for them. Now, there's very little that I've seen on the field right now to justify all that.
Well, I can't gauge how good their coaches are. If we're judging their coaches on the outcome, then the coaches need to be fired too.
I say that to say...
Fair enough, right?
I say that to say that what I'm about to say could be 100% wrong, but I haven't given up entirely on Jackson Holliday. I think he is starting to do what I think the problem is with all this, because this team can't hit. We can lay down everything. Defense is its own entity. This team can't hit. These guys don't know how to hit. It's fascinating. And so much of it is about chasing slug and hitting the ball to all fields. And we are finally watching Jackson Holliday in this hot run do what is missing from so much of the rest of this team's game.
Use the field. Right.
And not necessarily look to hit home runs at every point. I'm sorry. Whatever you want to say about analytics, the idea that taking the information that's out there and saying, we're going to use that to hit more home runs, the rarest of contacts in the sport, is ludicrous. Because what you've seen is the Major League Baseball batting average drop precipitously to where 235 to 240 is the Major League average, which is just insane. And
the pitching's gotten better and more specialized.
Well, people say the pitching's gotten
more specialized.
The pitching's gotten better, but that's because the hitting is trying to achieve one thing that's virtually impossible to do.
But guys are throwing harder than the average fastball velocity, more spin.
Great.
A middle ground. Like, I think it's some of both. I think it's both of those factors.
But ultimately, if you ask me, would I rather see a guy like a Jack Morris go have an ERA closer to 3.5, but go 8 innings on a regular basis, which impacts
but
the
average? You're living in 1978.
I understand
like
that. I understand that.
Oh, I think there's a reckoning that baseball needs to
arm injuries,
moving back in that direction a little bit, at least.
Arm injuries? You're going to tell me that the kid in Milwaukee isn't going to walk away with an arm injury in a year and a half?
Yeah.
Mason Miller, I would be so... I'd be so afraid to trade for Mason Miller because I think his arm's going to explode at some point. You tell me that all of these things are true, absolutely, but I'm going to tell you that more pitching injuries... It's harder to find pitching because of all of these things. All of that chasing perfection impacts everything else around it, and I think that the reckoning is real.
I don't think they know any other way, by the way.
You hear Miz talk about it. It's the only way I know how to throw.
It's just an arms race at this point. I mean, it really is.
I think, to answer your initial question, who do I have faith in? I think it's, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I think it's too early to give up on Coby Mayo as only a guy who can only hit lefties. But to see that come to fruition, you've got to suffer through him striking out 80% of the time against right-handers until he figures it out. And how do you chase the postseason when you're doing that, right? I think, do I believe that Gunnar Henderson is a 220 hitter? I don't. But do I think he's going to mature at some point to figure out he needs to calm himself down? I don't know. I think that's head stuff.
Can they play 5 games over 500 in August and 5 games over 500 in September? So I'm looking for
10 games over
16 and 11, and a 17 and 12. Okay, or whatever that adds up to. Can they do that? And I believe they pitch well enough to do that.
Right.
I believe if Gunnar Henderson and Jackson Holliday and Rutschman and Basayo all come back and are healthy. Forget Cows. They'll get a hit from an Encarnacion guy, and Mayo will win a game. And like I'll hear all of that. But the core part of this that we've been waiting on, that they've banked on, is there any chance at all that healthfully Rutschman can come back in a week and a half, and they can keep the pitching, the bullpen can figure it out, they can kick the ball around a little bit, but not as much, and that Henderson can hit 294 the rest of the year. Holliday can hit 281 for 2 months. They can spice this up. Tyler O'Neill can, once they deal Ward on Monday, Tyler O'Neill will step in, hit 238, but hit 12 home runs the next 2 months. You know what I mean? Like there is a formula for that they move from being mediocre lousy to mediocre a little better because the bats...
These
superstars are supposed to be freaking superstars, dude. Alonso. He's got freaking 30 home runs. I haven't seen one of them, to be honest with you.
He does not have 30 home runs.
What's he got?
got 22, I think.
He has 22.
Okay, he's going to hit 37 home runs, and how many am I going to notice? This is time for him to start hitting some I notice.
He's come out cold after the break, that's for sure.
I say this understanding that Bo Bichette is not setting the world on fire in New York right now. But I told you in the offseason I wanted Bo Bichette. And they got Pete Alonso, and I was lukewarm about it.
Very much
no, no pun intended. because I saw him as a slugger, and I thought they needed a hitter. And I believe that Bo Bichette is that kind of guy. Again, knowing what he's doing right now this season.
He's been bad this year.
But I see Alonso as a streaky slugger. I think
he kind of fits right in, doesn't he?
Yeah, right. and that's, you know, that's not what they need. They need a guy to solidify the middle of the lineup. They're batting second.
We thought Gunnar Henderson was that guy. We thought Gunnar Henderson was going to be.
Let me tell you about Gunnar Henderson. And I don't have the numbers to back this up. Gunnar Henderson has been most successful in the leadoff spot when he has not had the pressure of driving runs in on him, and he can just sort of do his thing. But I can't think of a time when he's batted third on any regular basis and impressed me as an elite aircraft carrier guy. And he was at his best when I know that Anthony Santander got hurt in Toronto, and there's no telling that would have happened in Baltimore. I don't know. But Santander, they have never replaced Anthony Santander.
That's correct.
And his presence.
And they were correct not to re-sign him because he's completely broken
and
down.
And they were incorrect to give the money to Tyler O'Neill if they were going to get something similar.
Those can both be true. Like they were right not to re-sign him. And
I keep hearing people say, "Well, they signed Tyler O'Neill, hit lefties." No, they didn't. They signed him to replace Santander, and he has not. That is not what he's. What he's
hitting
done.
Lefties was the headliner
for
that. But yes, they didn't sign. He wasn't signed to that contract to be a platoon player.
No, he was not.
Yeah, there's no way.
They can't jettison all of these players. That's the bottom line. Whether it's this year or next year. They need to ride some of this out with Holiday, Henderson, Westberg, assuming he comes back in any shape to play, Desio, obviously. But they need to find a way to bring in players around them. And Alonso's part of that. I think Alonso is a useful player, don't get me wrong. And he's certainly been a positive force on this team.
Despite what Dean Kramer might
think. In terms of leadership. And, I mean, he's driven in 60-plus runs. I mean, it's hard to exclude that. But they need to find guys who play the outfield right now who are defensively sound.
But he ain't no Eddie Murray.
No, he's not.
No, right.
Who are defensively sound and can impact this club, maybe not as aircraft carriers, but can fill in the blanks in the middle of that lineup to drive in runs and be productive players where they just don't have that guy right. Bisayo, I think, can mature into that, and I think Holiday can, at his best, be a guy who hits from the top of the lineup, batting second maybe, who helps drive the action for those guys to drive him in. I'd like to see that potential come to fruition. But they've got glaring holes right now in terms of how this team is going to work best, and I think they need to fill them essentially in the outfield spots, and that's probably going to come from center field. And one of the corner spots, if you believe that Dylan Beavers is a guy that can be part of the solution. And from an offensive standpoint, I think he can grow into a productive Major League Baseball player. And we'll see what happens defensively.
I agree with so much of what you said, but I also keep coming back to they've got to revamp this.
Sure.
They've got to trade a couple members of the young
team. Yeah.
And you know what? It might be a situation where you might get inferior value from that guy maybe figuring it out somewhere else. But you can't be afraid of that anymore. I think that's something that, if you recall, Nestor, over the winter, and I didn't even have a specific.
You mean the off season, or you mean this week?
In the off season.
Well, the off season is going to. I keep going back to the beginning.
But they are going to play baseball again at some point.
I agree with that.
So
I'm just wondering where their reduction is between now and next week, in whatever way, to say.
I don't think
these guys are expendable.
I'd be shocked if they're going to trade Adley Rutschman because.
He's hurt. Let's start with that.
First of all, he's hurt. Second of all, I mean, Mike Elias might as well just hand in his car key for the warehouse. You know what I mean? Like,
you blew it!
Right. And you know, I'm being a little facetious saying that, but not entirely. Because just how that will look, right? How a certain...
You know, it looked worse trying to give him $120 million.
Well,
yeah. Right?
And this is part of, like...
I'm getting nothing.
This is
going
to be my other point
with
what Alan just had to say. And as we're talking, we're going round and round talking about all these different guys. I mean, Rutschman, good, bad, or indifferent, is a year away from hitting free agency. Gunnar Henderson's 2 years away, and Scott Boras is his agent. He's not signing a contract extension for anything close to what you even think he might be worth right now, which Gunnar's, like, he's not the worst player in the league, let's be clear. You know,
he's closer to the worst than the best.
Well, but he's a league average player right now, and that's obviously not
anywhere.
He's
completely unsignable long term today.
I mean, he's signable.
He's not completely unsignable.
Yeah.
He's not going
to
get what
he wanted to, you know, if he wanted to offer.
That makes him unsignable. He wouldn't take the deal.
Well,
right.
He was unsignable before. I mean,
I
you could offer him
$600
million.
He's double unsignable because of his value being weird now.
Right.
That's all.
So, but the point is, everything you just said, even like they're in just such an awkward space at this point in time because the clock is ticking on the first couple guys that were supposed to be the faces of this, were the faces of this for a time, and we got the second half of 22 and 23 and the first half of 24.
Fool's gold.
But, I mean, I don't know if it was fool's gold, but it was like it just
we believe what our eyes told us. All three of these guys looked at this with 150 years of baseball under them and looked at it 2 years ago and said, oh, my God, Henderson's going to the Hall of something. Holiday's behind him.
2 years
Rutschman's
ago this time,
good.
They took two out of three from the Phillies. They were blowing through the baseball world,
yeah.
And they were arguably the best
and Corbin Burns was their one.
Every time I'm on with you, I say of Michael Elias, I blame him for Adley Rutschman and Garrett Crochet not being here. Let me tell you what I mean by that with Adley Rutschman. I understand that everybody in the sport would have said that Adley Rutschman was the bona fide number one guy. Okay, here's why I would never take this. I believed it then, and I believe it now. Here's why I'd never take a catcher number one. Number one, he could be the best player in the sport, and it takes one hit at the plate to end all of it. It's happened too many times for not to. There's the Buster Posey rule is out there to keep that from happening to the great catchers, and when you're a catcher, the chance of that happening, the percentage is much greater. Number two, your lifespan as a catcher is so much
it's
shorter.
A running back and baseball.
The
right,
body
right.
gets beat up, so even if you do live up to that, your window is so much shorter. You can't build around that guy. And if your offense is, people keep saying, oh, well, he's at some point he'll have to shift to first base. Why on earth would I play him at first base? His numbers.
Have the profile to justify.
Not even a little bit. And the third thing is that you can't play a catcher every day. You just can't. Not if you want to.
Don't tell Buck that.
Not if you want to. Right.
Came
that,
close
right,
to Weeders.
That's why it makes no sense to build your lineup around a catcher because if you want to preserve him at all, you just can't. So, I mean, that doesn't even.
Ask Joe Mauer.
That doesn't even ask the question, does he live up to the 1-1 billing? There are too many obstacles to get what you put into that draft spot to expect that that's going to happen. That's why I would never have drafted a catcher number 1-1. And as Luke said over there at the table, we have Matt Wieters and Adley Rutschman as experience that hopefully
I'll
it never happens
I would never
again.
Draft a catcher inside the top 10 again. In defense of Mike Elias for that, yes, groupthink, consent, all of that. But you are talking about someone who had come in after the team had just set a franchise record for losses in a year they actually were trying to contend.
Sure.
It was new regime. Fan base was, what's going to happen? Like, all of that.
He needed a short thing.
He needed a higher floor, right? Yeah. And
three All-Star appearances, you can make
a
case.
And let's also acknowledge Adley Rutschman, as college baseball players go,
the top
was
tier.
As high tier,
no question,
known commodity, known in the mainstream sports space, which you never say that about college baseball players. I mean, maybe there's one every two or three years. He was that for a couple years. Right?
He could throw behind the plate to second base
line. So there was that. And from the day he was drafted, from a branding standpoint, even though he was a few years away from the majors at that point,
he was
the face of the franchise.
Yep.
So I understand that, but for all the reasons you just said, which I agree with that, yeah, they made the wrong choice, obviously. But any high school player, including some of the greatest high school players of all time, They're younger. And yes, that means more upside, but it also means a much lower floor in terms of this could also, they could get hurt.
Yep.
You could realize they can't hit professional pitching, even at the double A level, let alone the majors. So there are so many of those guys, even drafted very early, don't even make it to the major leagues, let alone become a good major league ball player. So
ask
I understand. Yeah, I understand both sides of that big time. And that, again, I give him more grace for that specific move, but at the end of the day, yeah.
When you
8 years later,
when you're building a young pitching staff, for me, I would value a veteran catcher to help lead that kind of team anyway. And I'm not taking away. Adley's been fine behind the plate, and it's been exceptional this year in particular. But I would have liked a veteran catcher to be behind the plate as that team, as the Bradishes and the, you know, formerly Grace Rodriguez, those kind of guys were being developed. Whatever. But it's Adley Rutschman's not untouchable for me. I guess that's where.
Well, who is? Right.
Sam Basayo. Well,
you're not trading Basayo. You're not trading Bradish. You're not trading Boz. But as always the case, it's a sliding scale. I mean, like, the threshold for trading Adley Rutschman, if you don't do it in the next several days, then, I mean, what are you doing this winter? I mean, are you just going to...
In 2024, I would trade Jackson Holliday for Tarek Skubal in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. To get them to over the hump in that season. And now, Jackson Holliday, I would say, while I wouldn't use the term untouchable, is less touchable for me than he was at that point.
We really put a lot of value in these 1-1s, right? And part of it is,
yeah.
Part of it is, you have to suck for a year, and the fans live with that. And, you know, when Buster Olney came on, and he's persona non grata, apparently the Orioles fans hate him, and have hated him for a long time. They hate anybody that speaks truth. And he's, you know, he talked about them rebuilding trust with the community. At least Buster understood that,
sure,
in a way 30 years into this. But in a general sense, this has been a busted promise to the fan base that if we tank,
no question.
And Evan Drellick talked about that. Of course, he wrote the Astros book. I had him on this week. I mean, I've had great, great, top of class baseball conversation here this week. But part of this is, even from the outside, to your point, all the national people love these guys, and it was a great idea. We got Mike Elias, we're going to stink, and then we're going to be good. And then what happens when you aren't 8 years later, and the three of us are still here chronicling
it?
It is, they have a real mess. They have a,
yes, they do.
This is an ownership crisis, it really is.
And let me say something that I've been hesitant to say on the air. They have put a lot of Caucasian players on the field in a city that is fairly of color. And I think for a lot of people in this town, it's harder to connect with them, particularly at a point when these guys aren't performing, and you're looking around for other players to represent. And I think there's something to be said about that.
That's fair. you just kind
and they're lacking a Venezuelan and black journalist leadership in the clubhouse.
Oh, so the point. The bigger point, Alan.
The fact that we love the team and want to cover it's insane. That they
it's
don't
one thing to talk about them looking a certain. They're not winning. They're not winning.
They're not very good.
You know, they could be. They could all be blue, and it's like the blue Brian Roberts bobblehead or whatever, right? Whatever one.
I love this club,
but,
and there's nothing on earth. There's nobody. Jeff Robinson is the only Oriole I can think of at this moment who I just actively want. Hated that guy.
It's 40 years ago. I'm gonna get over it.
I have, but
childhood. Well, childhood.
It wasn't 40 years ago. My point, I guess, what I'm trying to say is, there's nobody on this team that I wouldn't want to see succeed. Nobody. But I've covered enough, watched enough, seen enough, and have an informed opinion enough to look at it and say. When you look at a puzzle and you see all the pieces spread out and you're trying to put it together, there comes a point when you know there are pieces missing.
Yeah.
There are things that don't fit here. Something got mixed up along the way.
Or a couple of duplicates that were thrown in the box.
And
there's not a spot for it.
And there are pieces about this team that just don't fit into a winning formula. And Mike Elias, who, as I like to say, falls in love with his toys a little too much, has to be willing to look himself in the mirror and acknowledge that and figure out a way to make.
I think his level of arrogance is on display for everybody. But
two things.
Finish it up for me. Yeah, take it home.
Two things, and you alluded to this, and it was going to be my drop the mic moment. Tanking isn't worth it. It isn't worth it because, honestly, if you can scout, you can develop.
It's dishonest.
You will find players over the course of the draft, whether you're picking first, or fifth, or 28th.
Yep.
Throughout the draft. So there's that. And I think you've seen, some of the players they've actually picked, go look at the top 10 in those specific drafts. There's not a whole lot to write home about that was drafted around them either. So that even further emphasizes my point that I don't think tanking to the extent that they or some other teams have. Look, I'm not saying the Orioles should have tried to win in 2019, but there are extremes of going about it that there are ways to field at least a mildly entertaining, more competitive club that is not
like the Reds.
That is not, but that is not going to compromise long-term goals to do that.
Cleveland, so Tampa, Milwaukee. How did you know? They find a way as they lose players, they just continue to win.
Yeah. And then the other factor that I think, and this should be ownership in the business side and the marketing side of any team, it's too much too soon to make Adley Rutschman when you draft him. And even he, who was a college World Series performer, Golden Spikes, all that, when you anoint those guys right away, I think you're setting up
David Kly
a lot. There is absolutely, and I'm not excusing those guys, mind you.
Brian Taylor.
But there is absolutely an argument to be made.
Ben McDonald, when he was supposed to be here.
From a mental side, when you are anointed the savior, boy, that crown is really heavy. And if you struggle, and you remember me saying the second half of 24, I said at the time, I believed at that point in time, those guys were going to be better in the long run for having gone through some scuffles. 2 years later, that didn't happen.
Well, Matt Wieters was going to save the stink 17 years
ago,
right? Literally.
You know, the idea of Colton Cowser, you know, you have the cow pasture sections, and like it sounds cute, it sounds great.
But you look around, you look at the team they put around Matt Wieters and Nick Markakis and Adam Jones, and they brought in J.J. Hardy, who was the most stabilizing player you could imagine. And
even they took a year or two to really get going. So maybe that's,
and it took Buck too.
And maybe Buck, that's just, maybe Buck, that's a soft reminder.
Well, and Al Burnett is a whole other discussion.
Yeah. Thumbs down.
I'm hesitant to say that a thumbs down on a guy who's got his training wheels on. But of the young managers I have watched begin their tenure, he impresses me less than a lot.
I agree wholeheartedly.
I'll say that.
Luke Allen, my dudes, time for Crab Cakes. It is the Maryland Crab Cake Tortoise, all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have number 36. That's my lucky number, by the way. Raven Scratch-Offs available now. Second chances. Make sure you're doing all that. John Martin and I got together and talked about it. We'll be at Coco's on the 26th of the month. I'm getting back to State Fair, getting back to Fishmonger's Daughters, working at dates. Imagine this. All my tired, hardworking restaurant friends are on vacation this week, including Coco's next week. So don't go looking for – you need Crab Cake, come out of Costas, because Coco's is shut down next week. But we'll be there on the 26th as we take care of all of our local sponsors. We love them all because they're Greek and they keep me fat, which doesn't help me with my GBMC people because they're going to give me my let my booty grow over here. But I had a fried crab cake today. I'm proud of that, you know.
Sounds good to me.
From Costas, why wouldn't you?
I had real crabs from Costas on Sunday. So one time this year I went after them. I'll get some more. I was telling people I don't eat crabs because I'm learning how to play the guitar, but that's a lie. If I cut my fingers in it. Pitchers and guitar players are afraid of crabs.
Are you playing? Right?
No, I'm not playing.
Okay.
I'm playing with my AI.
No.
What?
I got a podcast for you. You should listen to.
What's it called?
Diary of a CEO.
Is it mine?
It's
called Baltimore Positive?
It's not, but yours you should listen to as well.
Diary of a Struggling, Tired of Losing Baseball CEO. That's me. Luke Jones is here. He will be out at training camp next week. You having fun out there?
I am. The weather's been great, which I know it's going to be
95
degrees.
Yourself. Yeah. Totally. You know,
this is the equivalent of being in the press box and saying, man, this game's going really fast, which is a cardinal sin to
look at the rain. Look at the rain delay. Look at him tie the game when it's 7-0. My thanks to Pete and everybody out here at Costas. Patrick Dyer was on earlier as well, and we've had great guests here all along. Zach Dermer, whose family at Farner and Dermer keeps us in business. Luke sometimes wears the shirt, and sometimes he doesn't wear the shirt. It's okay. Either way, we love him. I am Nestor signing off from Costas in Timonium. If you want crabs, go to Dundalk. If you want the OTB, come here to Timonium. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.